Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where every episode we talk about our favorite superhero team, the bestest team in all of comicdom, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Hello, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And if you want to send us emails, send them to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're also on Facebook, and there's a website which has posts about our show and posts about the Doom Patrol, which is certainly worth checking out. And it's called mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. It's done by our friend Doug Savisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv, or you can also find my current Halloween name, Spoopy Aff Halloween name.
What's going on there, Mike?
I'm Spoopy of Sorry. It's a bit early for that sort of language. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter there. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod.
Hello, humans.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, Comicosity has a fantastic interview with one of my favourite writers, James Robinson, talking about his upcoming, well, I think it's just started, his stint on Wonder Woman.
Oh.
And one of the things I like about James Robinson, he's very candid in his interviews, and, you know, he says, he's basically, you know, is this a story you wanted to tell? He's like, no, it's a story I was asked to tell, but, you know, I'm going to do lots of interesting stuff for that, and I certainly want to, you know, there's been a lot of criticism because it's a Wonder Woman story and it's about Wonder Woman's brother, who was
interesting
DC Rebirth and mentioned in the Dark Side War JLA series, and so he said, I'm picking up those pieces, but I was asked to do it, but I'm certainly doing a strong focus on Wonder Woman in it, and the first issue is out, and I've heard very good things already.
Cool. So,
yeah. But I love a James Robinson interview. That was one of the joys of being a fan of his, was his interviews were just as good as his writing at some point. But, yeah, I think he's been through his rough patch, and I think he's back on track as a talent worth watching.
Nice. I am a fan of his work, yes, and I'm a fan of Wonder Woman as well. I must admit that was one of the titles I was getting regularly, but I might have to get back into it now that he's on.
Hmm.
No disrespect to any of the previous creators that would have worked on that, but yeah.
Yeah, anyway, getting back to, that's at Comicosity if you want to read it.
Sorry.
So I forgot where we were.
Anyway, what have you been up to since we were last on air, Paul?
Well, you may have heard me mention it before, that there's a webcomic called Gorilla My Dreams.
Yes, you have mentioned this art before, yeah. Yes.
Done by Canberra and Tim Styles, or actually Queanbeyan, and so he's actually over the border in Queanbeyan, near Canberra.
Right.
So it's a webcomic called Gorilla My Dreams. It's done by Big Tim Styles, or Tim Styles, as he's sometimes known, and it's got amazing art by Ahmed Rafat, and he's got a really sort of Chris Sprousey type feel. So really good art, but it's about a gorilla superhero who's investigating a sort of a murder of a mime, and it leads into sort of whole, you know, underworld of mimes and clowns. And
right.
Fantastic. But I will be honest, I stopped reading the webcomic at one point because I thought, no, I want to finish this in a hard copy. And, you know, I know Tim, and it's sort of, I would hassle him for a hard copy when the time came. But I don't have to, because he's on Kickstarter. The comic is finished, and it's up on Kickstarter. So, you know, for $10, I have secured myself a copy of the comic.
Nice.
And it went up, I think, about 3 days ago, and it's almost there. So, yeah, it looks like it's about 85% funded at this point, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
So 25 days to go. But, check it out. Gorilla My Dreams, A Mime of My Life is the name of this one-shot. But you're going to see a lot more of Ahmed Rafat in the future. I think he's going to get grabbed if Tim can't find a way to keep him. So
we might see if Wilfred can send out a link to that Kickstarter as well. Give the guys a bit of a shout-out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Do your bit, Wilfred.
Yeah, he's so lazy.
This show would be nothing without me.
What about you, Mike?
Not a great deal. Work and life in general, you know, carries on as it does. I will say I've been loving the heck out of the new Star Trek Discovery series. For those that don't know, I'm a massive Trekkie. I have every DVD of all the series and all the movies. I've even got the animated series, which is interesting. But yeah, it's something that
my... Do you own a uniform?
Kind of. It's
what color?
It's a costume. I went to the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas a couple of times. Ooh. And one time I went dressed as a character from one of my favorite episodes from the series Enterprise, which was Cold Station 13.
And was it the green woman?
No.
Oh.
No, it was basically a science lab guy. So it's very basic. It's just basically a white lab coat with the Cold Station 13 patch on the shoulders. And I wore, you know, like a shirt and tie under it. So, and then I got to meet one of the stars from the show there. And he was like, oh, so who are you dressed as? And I was a little bit crushed because I was like, oh, dude, it was from your own series. It was, you know, an ep that you were in and that. And he was like, oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So it was a little bit, you know, soul crushing. But anyway, yeah, Star Trek Discovery, I'm a bit biased because I love the Trek universe and all the shows. And yeah, I'm enjoying the heck out of that one so far. I think they're doing some really interesting things with it. I'm a little bit confused as to exactly the setting of it, because they're saying it's set 10 years before Kirk's time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's in space, but I don't know where.
That too. But the technology they have and the appearance of the ships, I'm starting to wonder if it's going to get revealed that it's actually in the recent movie Trek universe in the end.
I've heard talk that it isn't, but...
Yeah, that's where I'm confused, because they've got far better tech than Kirk's era ever had, but, you know...
It's not all knob-based technology.
No, it's not. They have a distinct lack of knobs on the show.
Okay, go ahead.
I think I've stumped Flanger.
Oh,
well, there we go, kids. If you ever want to make... I'm sure Paul is blushing right now, and the way to do that is mention knobs.
Well, I just couldn't think of any way to raise the tone at that point.
Oh, look. I'm afraid. Yeah, we're a way down already. Sorry about that. Look, let's try and salvage the show. And let's go have a look at what's happening down on Durrington Way, shall we, Paul?
We shall. Okay, if we want to look what's happening on Durrington Way, it's fairly quiet. So the next issue is issue 9. It's out soon. And issue 10 has a variant cover by Kyle Smart, and it's finally been revealed. And it shows Flex Mentallo lifting up Danny the Ambulance over his head with the Chief and Robot Man underneath, and Terry Nunn holding a box of what I would assume was shit, and Lotion the Cat in actual cat form in this picture, with a bowl of what could possibly be shit, and some very prominent nipples on Flex Mentallo.
Yeah. It's a cool cover, yeah.
It is very cool. It's kind of pastel-y and looks like,
I like how everyone's sort of got, like, you know, the little stunned expressions on their face as they're looking at different stuff. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I like it. It's a cool one. Apart from that, I've been trawling and I cannot bring up anything in the net. So,
No news is good news, I guess. As long as
no news is good news.
You know, keep to their current schedule or something.
Yeah, but is that the sound of ticking that I hear?
It is, Paul. And behind you, it's a doom clock.
Holy crap.
So yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had in our hot hands came out only 4 weeks ago, issue 8 of volume 6, which we discussed in episode 104, and showed us the return of Lotion the Cat, and the relationship between him and Casey taking an interesting turn, and the public launch of the Wonder Food shit. The best thing Casey's ever eaten, apparently.
Yes.
Issue 9, at this stage, it's scheduled for release on October 18th, so just 2 weeks away. Come on, don't let us down now, guys. just don't be a knob about it, guys. Just get the book out. Sorry, couldn't.
Don't nobble the schedule.
God. Anyway, this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for $2.50 American on October 3rd of 2001, 16 years to the day as we record, Paul. How cool is
that? Wow.
With the cover date of December of that year was issue 1 of Doom Patrol Volume 3 from John Arcudi, Tan Eng Huet, Bob Lappin, and David Stewart. This issue was, well, actually, it didn't have a title. So this issue was titleless and introduced us to the metahumans Fever, Kid Slick, Freak, and Fast Forward, along with the businessman Theo Jost and his brilliant plan to form a four-fifths new, all-different Doom Patrol, thanks to the reluctant help of Cliff Steele, Robot Man. Volume 3 so good.
Love it, love it. And can I, here's my theory. You want to hear my theory?
Yeah.
Okay, so Comixology at the moment, they are putting out old issues of Doom Patrol, so volume 1 issues of Doom Patrol, and they are 1 week away, so by the end of this week, by the time this episode is out, they will have finished putting out volume 1 issues, I reckon. Ooh. So I reckon soon after this, they're going to start volume 3.
How cool would that be?
That's my gut feeling.
Yeah.
So we will celebrate that when it happens.
We will. And then everyone can go back and listen to those episodes and read along.
Yeah.
What will that be? Oh, you're welcome, guys. You're welcome.
Yeah. Awesome.
And if you want to start off with Volume 3, we covered this and the second issue way back in Episode 67 from August of 2016. So you can check that one out for more. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hey there. I'm Nathaniel with some exciting news about the Punch Like a Girl podcast. Oh, hey, Liz, I'm just doing the promo. Tell the people about how the podcast we do together covering graphic novels and trade collections starring female protagonists is moving to, and actually, I'm mansplaining again, aren't I?
Uh-huh.
Well, I can just, here you go.
Punch Like a Girl is joining the Fire and Water Network, and as of October will be found on the network feed and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Is it okay if I just invite folks to join us in celebrating the girls who kick butt?
I think you already did.
Yes! Nailed it!
Don't worry, folks. I'll keep them in line.
And now we've reached the part of the show we call Doomsplaining, where we talk all about specific issues of a Doom Patrol run or a story which featured the Doom Patrol. And because we kept it a bit of a surprise, what we're going to cover in this episode, how about we crank up the Doom radio and get some background music to hype things up. Put us in the mood, yeah. It's going to be a hot time in the old town tonight. All right, so here we go. Wilfred, if you could please crank up the Doom radio. Thanks, mate. Yeah.
wait and see.
Burn, Hollywood, burn. I smell a riot going on. First the guilty, now they're gone. Yeah, I'll check out a movie, but it'll take a black one to move me.
12.
Only reading the letters you wrote me. I'm searching and scanning for answers in every line, for some kind of sign. And when you were mine, the world seemed to burn.
Burn.
Ooh, Ministry, leave it there. Okay, so having listened to the radio poll, what do you possibly think we're going to be looking at?
So just any type of sign, any sign of anything. I feel like it's time we've got to rip off the scab and have a good look at Burn.
Yes, we are going to be looking at the storyline called The Tenth Circle, which was actually in the JLA series from 2004, issues 94 through to 99. So we're going to be discussing all six issues. Yay.
Yeah, because we don't want to spend three eps on this.
So
anyway, we're going to be positive, though. We're going to look for something positive in this, and we're going to, you know, we're going to be fair. We're not going to, you know.
We are going to be fair. There are some good things to this story.
Good sum.
Bits. So the creative team on this storyline had John Byrne doing the pencils and the majority of the writing. He had an assist from Chris Claremont on the dialogue. Jerry Ordway was on the inks. Tom Ozakowski was a letterer, and apologies, Tom, if I've mispronounced that. David Barron was on the colours, and it was edited by Mike Carlin. So, Paul, kick us off with the first half of The Tenth Circle, please.
Okay, so JLA 94. Meditating mystic member of the JLA, Manitou Raven, senses a great evil rising, but before he can teleport to the watchtower to warn the team, he is swarmed and overwhelmed by bats. Speaking of bats, Batman comes across a police crime scene, and there's a suspicious X in a circle chalked on the alleyway wall, and there's a murdered teenage girl drained of blood, one of dozens of teens whose whereabouts is up in the air. Speaking of up in the air, Superman is patrolling Metropolis skies when he sees hooded figures herding teens into a truck. Dropping in to investigate, he is attacked by a super strong cloaked figure who grunts at him, and a young robed woman at the scene stops Superman in his tracks with her mind control, compelling him to leave with them in their truck. Ooh. Speaking of trucks, Flash is racing around Central City looking for another missing teen. He finds a piece of paper with an X in a circle, indicating the X-Men are most likely behind these disappearances. Speaking of the X-Men, some old dude in a wheelchair talks to his team about two missing members. Speaking of members, Superman arrives in the truck with the teens and the road people and meets a dick called Crucifer, who sucks his blood. Speaking of sucks, the story continues with the JLA talking a lot while the mesmerized Man of Steel attacks team member Faith, flying off with her unconscious body. Oh,
lovely segues.
Thank you.
How do you get from truck to Flash?
Yeah, that one was a bit of a stretch, but I'll point out, Do you notice the cover of these, the first three issues all basically show what happens at the end of every issue? Superman flinging Faith to the ground on a big X in a circle. Yeah. So, it's surprising that the former X-Men team are working the X-Men into the JLA. Anyway, issue 95 continues the story. Green Lantern John Stewart is on patrol in Baltimore when he spots some teens being loaded into a truck, plus the usual rogue ne'er-do-wells. And one of whom is Vortex, who fells John with some type of vortex. John is about to pursue the truck when a giant woman grabs him and a random patrolling team asks him to leave this to them. The groggy Green Lantern agrees and returns to the Watchtower, where Wonder Woman has finally remembered that the X-Men symbol is actually that of a vampiric cult representing the 10th Circle of Hell. The Atom shrinks down to look inside one of Manitou Raven's stones for some reason and gets beaten up by some microbial green monsters. Superman returns to the JLA to sabotage Wonder Woman's research by destroying some old Themyscirian scrolls. And in Gotham, Batman confronts the cop who found the teen body, who insists it was no murder. And as rogue figures approach Batman, the cop shoots him. Also on the cover.
It's like they're spoiling their own work.
I know. God. Anyway. Issue 96 continues this crazy breakneck speed story. In flashback, we see Alfred give Batman a crucifix, just in case. And Martian Manhunter can no longer sense the Atom inside Manitou Raven's little rocks. And the Atom, meanwhile, meets an alien princess who apologizes for the alien attack on him. And Faith is overpowered by Crucifer with the help of the teenage cultist with the mind powers, who we still don't know her name, even though she's the main character in this story. But Batman is okay after being shot, and he punches the cop who shot him, because the cop shot him in the chest and not in the face. But he finds the rogue dudes are actually bat people, like vampire bat people. Batman kills one of the Batmen with a stick, while the other escapes. Batman then frees the cop from their mind control with the handy-dandy crucifix that Alfred gave him, which is useful. at Crucifer's crib, the girl is hanging with the Grunter, who turns out to be a four-armed, ape-faced ape known as Grunt, and the vortex-generating fellow known as Vortex. She tells the long involved story of how she met Grunt at a circus. She was walking past a circus and met him. That's the story goes. Then some random people on patrol came and took Grunt, and she went with them until she and Grunt left and fell in with to Crucifer's creepy clutches. It's hard to say. Anyway, Superman shows up with Wonder Woman at Castle Crucifer and then blindsides her, leading her to fight Superman, Batman, and Crucifer with a sword. And then Crucifer gets a sword off her and stabs her through the chest on the cover. Yeah. So, Mike, how the first half of this story, how do you think it's going?
Look, I can't fault the art. The art's very good. It's very...
solid.
It's solid art. The story itself, I'm still confused as to why Atom went into Manitou Raven's telling stone.
Yeah.
I don't quite get, unless there was something I missed.
Yeah, I didn't get that either, but my theory is that John Byrne wanted to do something with the Atom and needed a little side adventure for him because right. There's lots of members of the JLA and having them all getting taken out by Crucifer was not that exciting. So, you know, Atom gets a micro-adventure in a rock for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Crucifer. So are you familiar with the Preacher special Cassidy Blood and Whiskey?
Yes, I might even have that stashed away in a box somewhere.
Yeah, well, Cassidy is a very working-class Irish vampire.
Yes.
And there's nothing he hates more than a Ponzi vampire wearing lace and, you know, sort of...
I do know, have this
swanning
story,
around.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of my favourite Preacher stories where Cassidy basically wipes out this vampire who's so pretentious and an absolute wanker, as he would call him.
A knob, even.
Yeah, and, you know, that's Crucifer.
Yeah, pretty much. pretty much.
Crucifer has a comb over. Crucifer is, he wears, you know, sort of 18th century clothes. He talks all fancy-like.
He's a very stereotypical old Hollywood vampire.
Yeah, with a little bit of Pee Wee Herman going on as well.
Okay, yeah, a little bit. I can see it now. I'll never be able to unsee it, but anyway. Yeah, it's okay. There's nothing that has wowed me about this first half of the story. Even though she sort of doesn't... I'm not even sure she calls herself Nudge in the third part, but some of her
dialogue... Well, we don't get a name in the first three issues.
No, we don't, and... Some of her dialogue, if she's meant to be a teenage girl, she does not talk like a teenage girl.
Yeah.
And I have a perfect example of that, which I'll get to when I cover the latter half of this run. But, yeah, it's an okay Justice League story so far. It's a nice kind of mysterious introduction for this other team.
Feels to me like it's sort of Justice League by the numbers. Like it's like give everyone something to do. Superman gets mind controlled. Wonder Woman gets blindsided. Batman gets shot and he's investigating. Green Lantern, you know how John Stewart, which is nice. But you know, I don't really know Faith and Manitou Raven. I was on board for JLA when Morrison started it, and then stuck around for Wade, and then didn't hang around after that. So I don't really have much attachment to those characters, and they just don't feel very... I mean, they feel more like outsiders, you know, from that series than they do Justice League-level characters.
Yeah, it's like Byrne thought, I need some reserve members to pad it out a bit. Oh, here's some.
You know? Yeah, and John Johns, the Martian Manhunter, is basically babysitting the Atom inside a rock for...
Yeah,
that's his part of the story. So, bit underserved there, but you know, it's. I think I'm enjoying it more than the first time I read it. So, which was a couple of years back after you gifted these issues to me on Comixology.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Honestly, that cover of number 96 with Wonder Woman stabbed through the chest with the sword.
Mm-hmm.
No one should ever draw Wonder Woman in that pose.
No.
Ever. No.
It's a tad wrong.
Just looks bad.
Yeah. So, I think we're agreed. It's an okay JLA story so far. It's nothing spectacular. We're getting hints as to, you know, who this mysterious other team is that's investigating the vampires as well. So,
even that it's very it's so obvious who they are. Why don't you just go out and say it? Anyway,
yeah. Well, I wonder if he wanted to ease the readers into it, and then you know, hold on to all the good stuff when he launched the Doom Patrol series.
Yeah. Do you want to take us through the second half of this six-parter?
Boy, do I ever. That's our show, folks. No, okay. All right. I'll be fair. So, yes, issue 97, part 4 of the Tenth Circle, opens with the Justice League racing to a hospital in Las Vegas to check on Wonder Woman, who's been dumped unceremoniously in the desert through a portal after Christopher's attack. Investigating her armor, Batman discovers a note with the sign of the Tenth Circle, sending the team a signal, a challenge to take them on. Go, heroes. As Crucifer reports to his other dimensional superiors on his activities, Nudge receives a vision from Manitou Raven, and soon she, Grudge, and Vortex locate Crucifer's portal, which sends the girl and the gorilla back to Florida, just outside the patrol's headquarters. And in the Microverse, the Atom continues to make friends with the lizard beings, with one of their priestesses taking him to inspect their most sacred relic, left behind by someone they call the Precursor. But in our world, Crucifer leads his forces in an attack on the town of Barnes in Saskatchewan, where they satellite a giant X to mark the return of the Tenth Circle. Uh-oh. And after Batman investigates residue found on Green Lantern's uniform, he discovers it's a unique mix of limestone and coral found only in Florida. And so he leads the Justice League straight to the DPHQ.
Wow.
And so issue 95 opens up, actually showing the League as they're travelling to the Key Mondaz fort just before they enter it, where they have to fend off Grunt's attack as they try to question Nudge. When John Johns, the Martian Manhunter, tries to read her mind, he's suddenly struck by a multitude of voices from elsewhere, crying out in rage. Oh no. Green Lantern imprisons the pair before the League finally enter the fort. Meanwhile, at Castle Crucifer, Vortex shows he's not averse to killing after a vampire attacks him, while on Themyscira, Wonder Woman is forced to rest and heal despite wanting to help the League out. And back in Barnes, Crucifer begins sacrificing locals as part of his portal opening ritual. And in Key Mondaz, the League and the Patrol finally meet properly and agree to team up against Crucifer. Fancy that. Manhunter reveals that Nudge is somehow psychically bonded with Manitou Raven, hence the pain he encountered. And Rita shrinks down and enters the dimensional nexus in Manitou's telling stone to rescue the Atom, who actually shows her the sacred relic that was left behind by Crucifer. That's who the precursor was.
Oh.
Imagine that.
It's all related.
Because Crucifer's been using the nexuses to teleport around, apparently. There you go. And this sacred relic may just be the key that the teams need to defeat him, Paul.
Oh,
do you think they'll do it?
I hope so.
So yes, issue 99, the big finale, shows us that through the power of talking and Manhunter scanning Nudge's mind, the teams have pieced everything together. Millennia ago, the Amazons banished Crucifer's race to another dimension, where they spent centuries trying to return. Obviously one of them, Crucifer, eventually succeeded and realized that he needed humans to act as vessels for his brethren to transfer their life force into. Of course. Unfortunately, normal humans were too frail for this process, but it turned out that those with superpowers could withstand the process, and the younger they were, the more susceptible they'd be to his influence. God, I can't say that word. Anyway. At some stage, Crucifer encountered the extra-dimensional lizard beings and made an arrangement with them that would make him effectively unkillable, where he left the sacred relic there. But now that Atom and Elastigirl have found this relic, he's vulnerable. Uh-oh. Our heroes just need to find him. And it's at this point that Nudge reveals that the portal to Castle Crucifer is still open. So the majority of the teams teleport back there and collect Vortex along the way because he knows where all the vampires are, and they all head off to the big human sacrifice party in Saskatchewan. So cue the big conflicted superhero battle where they need to fend off vampires and mind-controlled superpowered teams but not hurt the innocent civilians. Of course, the tide soon turns against Crucifer, who hops back to his castle via a portal. But he's walked right into another fight as Vortex and Wonder Woman are there and they try and apprehend him. With a mind-controlled Superman assisting him, Crucifer, however, gains an edge on them and takes a bite out of Dana's neck, only to recoil in horror with a mouthful of green blood. Just as Wondy is revealed to actually be the Martian Manhunter in disguise, Batman arrives on the scene, and he radios Niles Calder, who radios Rita and Atom, who, with a combined power kick, destroy the relic in the lizard being dimension. The big reveal is that the relic was actually Crucifer's heart, which he left as a sign that he'd return with his people to destroy the lizards if they failed to assist him. This book, it's making me fail to talk. Anyway, with the villain now thoroughly weakened, his hold over Superman is gone, and with Crucifix in hand, Big Blue punches right through Crucifer's chest, reducing him to a pile of ash. Hooray!
Hooray!
Later, in the JLA's Watchtower, the teams, along with their rescued Manitou Raven and Faith, are celebrating and recuperating after their adventure. Niles agrees to take in Nudge, Grunt, Vortex, and even Faith, as he's interested to learn more about them. The Patrol say their goodbyes and are teleported home. As the Leaguers pat themselves on the back for a job well done, Atom comments, "From what I saw of him, I hate to say that Crucifer was totally the worst of the worst." To which Batman replies, "Perhaps, but in the end, it's safe to say his heart was in the right place." The League and this reader are left stunned that Bats would tell such an awful joke.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah. It's yeah. Again, I've got to say, I can't fault the art in this. The art's fine. It does a great job. It shows a lot of action. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of color. Again, it's the story itself, which I find lacking.
Yeah, I mean, Burn with Ordway Inks is awesome. Yes. Yeah, and I really like this version of Robot Man. I mean, for the first half of the story, Robot Man is wandering around without any armor on. So, I mean, he kind of, you remember how C-3PO looks in The Phantom Menace?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. You can't get that bit of your life back, but there you go. He looks a bit like that, like he's sort of nude, but then he armors up towards the end of the story and looks much more Cliff Steely, more like the Robot Man we know and love. I will say nice things about Nudge. A four-armed gorilla looks pretty rad. He's got this kind of like harness on that's very much like Mammoth from the Teen Titans baddies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of knobs on it. It's got knobs on it. There you go.
There we go.
But, I mean, immediately I'm scratching my head about Rita because Rita's dead. Rita died with the rest of the Doom Patrol, and then the rest of the Doom Patrol weren't quite as dead as Rita. But she never came back, and here she's just back. She's just like another, it's like it never happened.
Well, even when the League first meet them, they say, oh, hang on, didn't you all die? And they kind of brush all that aside.
Yeah.
We got better.
Yeah.
It's
a bit of continuity redefining at this point. And I don't find this Rita half the woman that Rita used to be in the 60s.
No. No.
She was very strong-willed and, you know, independent. And, you know, here, you know, the first time she shows up, she gets a compliment on her looks from the chief. And so, oh, how nice. Way to reduce. And we've got to talk about Larry. So Larry traditionally wears bandages, and that's an absolutely awesome look. You know, goes back to his, you know, I'm a freak sort of life. Mm-hmm. Burn decides to improve on that by making him wear a gimp mask in this comic. Yeah.
I will say, I actually don't mind the negative being that he projects in this, which is basically a glowing skeleton.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I think that's a cool visual. I still, of course, prefer the black living energy version, but I think it's a nice twist on what we're used to seeing of the negative energy.
Right, yeah. I don't know if I like it.
That's fair.
It just
looks... I definitely don't like Gimp Mask Larry.
No, Gimp Mask Larry is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the team seem just very, you know, individual. You know, all their individuality seems to be subsumed in this comic. Like, you know, they're all just there as the patrol. There is a, you know, functional team. You know, they don't come across as the outcasts and the outsiders, the, you know, the people who don't fit in with society.
No, they don't. And that is if you read this story, that basically sets the stage for them throughout all of Burn's run, which is part of the issue I have with it. It's a very, all the weirdness and the bizarre is completely absent from Burn's run when compared to every other run. It's just not there. And it's very, you know, hands on hips, you know, standing, you know, before the citizenry, ready to save the world. It's that kind of very superheroic patrol.
Yeah.
And that's just why, as far as I'm concerned, his run doesn't work at all as a patrol run.
Well, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt because I haven't read it all yet. But,
We'll get there. I also have to complain again about Nudge's dialogue. Some of it's... She does not... She appears to be a teenage girl. She doesn't talk like a teenage girl. And here's a classic example from the big fight in Saskatchewan where she's talking to another superpowered teenage girl who... apparently has plant powers, and she turns her arms into vines to wrap up Batman. And Nudge is trying to convince her to let Batman go, and she says, "Crucifer used hypnosis to sink his hooks into me, but you joined him willingly. When the vampire moved into your soul, you welcomed it like a lover." I'm like, really?
You're well, that's Brittany for you. Brittany's one. That's what Brittany's like.
Oh, that Brittany. God. But I'm thinking, you're in the middle of a huge fight against killer vampires, as opposed to nice vampires. But anyway, you know, and yeah, it's just, oh, it gets my goat. It really does. Some of this dialogue.
Yes, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention the way the issue ends, and it actually segues straight into Doom Patrol number one, with the team returning to their Doom Patrol headquarters and finding the chief strung up, sort of semi-crucified, with he's got robot arms and a robot glowing chest sort of thing, and he's surrounded by vampires.
Oh, no.
So... And Cliff sums it up by saying, "More of those damn vampires." Yep. More of those damn vampires.
Oh, those and damn vampires.
This little box that says, "For even more, don't miss Doom Patrol number one next month."
Yeah.
Vampires! Exclamation mark. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So overall, it's... Okay, it's cool to see the Patrol back in the DCU proper and interacting with the big guns. That I'm fine with. The execution of it is... It, as you said, it's a very by-the-numbers Justice League story. And everyone's there, everyone does their bit, and they try to cram everyone in, and it kind of works, I guess. But... Yeah, it's not my favourite Justice League story.
Oh, it's far from mine. Yeah, I mean, everyone, I don't know, like, Crucifer is just, you could have fun with a weird vampire, you know, you could really, you know, play with the trope and, you know, subvert it a bit, but in this, you know, he is exactly as he looks, you know.
Yeah.
He is a bad haircut. Old-fashioned vampire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the only interesting twist is that, you know, oh, they got banished to another dimension by the Amazon. So it all kind of... I guess that's a bit different. But yeah, there's nothing in this story that makes me go, wow, this is a great story.
No. All right. Now, to impose this on ourselves and to make this... not completely negative. What do you think was the best bit of the story?
The art. I think the art's fine. It does a good job. And I guess seeing the Patrol meet up with the Justice League, and I guess seeing them work together, that was cool. Because, yes, they're the outsiders, but when I like the occasional moment they get to interact with the rest of the universe that they inhabit. How about you?
It's mostly the art as well. I think the stuff with the atom going into Manitou's stone is visually really strong. Mm-hmm. And also, Byrne does a clever thing with Wally West running around. It's a Flash in that his body sort of distorts with the speed, which I don't remember many people doing that, unless it was really extreme. Yeah, but... Yeah, they're probably my favourite bits. But, I mean, the clues of the Tenth Circle are just... You know, that's so ham-fisted.
You know? Yeah.
Everyone who gets taken leaves a bit of paper with an X and a circle on it.
Yeah.
Handy.
Mm.
But looking at all the covers together, they're, you know, the X is on every cover pretty much except the fifth part of the story.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It's,
But I am interested to read more of this Doom Patrol and see what's what's coming.
Yeah, it's again, my biggest issue is that when you put it alongside the five other volumes now, it doesn't have any of the weirdness about it. It's just very straight superheroics. There are some kind of weird adventures that happen there, but it's, yeah, it's very straightforward, gung-ho, let's save the day. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see you get through those. Let's get to the... Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, I think we've doomsplained that.
We have. Let's go check out the mailbag.
Okay. And now it's time for the mailbag doom. And the question of the week for this episode is, what name in comics do you have problems pronouncing? Oh, sorry, I'm having a bit of trouble. Do you want to do the segment without me, Mike?
I was genuinely concerned for you there. And no, you're just doing a duck shove and wanting me to try and read out all these insane answers.
All right, let's get to it. So, what name in comics do you have problems pronouncing? And the first response was from Ed Latore, and he said, the Dread Pyramid of Itzilichlitzel.
Itzilichlitzel.
I don't even know what comic that's from.
The Ill Chili Schnitzel. The Dread Pyramid of the Ill Chili Schnitzel. Yeah.
There you go. Done.
There we go. Yeah, I didn't get around to trying to research that one, Ed, so you'll have to let us know what it's from. So we can make Paul say it more.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
We then heard from Chris at BTO and Bat Books, and he said, I've heard folks pronounce differently, oh, God, Kazar, Mr. Mixalicplick, oh, I've got to murder all of these. Darkseid, Magneto, Ra's al Ghul, and Shadow in Green Arrow.
I'm sure I always said some of that. I always said Kazar.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was only recently that I realized people were calling him Magneto. I've always called him Magneto.
Have you?
Yeah.
Huh.
There you go.
Wow. Ra's al Ghul, Shadow. I always said Shadow. I don't find that one a problem. We heard from Aaron Long, who I'm actually grateful his answer because it's one I want to say. Robot Man. Thank you, Aaron. Well done.
You pair of bastards. Oh, sorry, that's a bit harsh. You pair of knobs. We then heard from Clinton at Coffee and Comics blog on the Twitters, and he wrote Kilgore, but he's used a percentage sign for the zero. Flash villain. So is it Kilga percentager? I don't know.
Well, it's a sort of robot-y type, computer-y type monster, so yeah.
Okay.
Meant to be read, not to be said. That's what I would say. we heard from the Gorge podcast. I've never heard of that. Hello. And they said, is it Namor or Namor? And which syllable do you emphasize? Namor.
I've always gone with Namor.
I've always said Namor, but I've heard people, I always get confused when people say the Submariner, because to me it's so obviously the Submariner.
That's how I say it. Namor the Submariner. And I'm sure people have given me grief online and go, no, it's Submariner. I'm like,
yeah.
Whatever. Stupid fish, man. The Trapster at Apex Predator KM. I think this is the first time we've heard from the Trapster. Hello. Thanks for joining us. And they've suggested Ozymandias, Ra's al Ghul, and Circe is how I pronounce that one. Or is it Circe?
Yeah, I've always said it's Cirque. I don't know. I've always said Circe.
Right.
The Wonder Woman evil...
she's a witch.
Sorceress. Sorceress. She's a witch. I don't know. We heard from Jonathan Dye at Changing Shades, and he said either Bill Sienkiewicz, I think I've nailed that, or Dustin Nguyen, or Nguyen, I've heard it said.
I can confirm it's Bill Sienkiewicz.
Sienkiewicz.
Mm.
Okay, I've stuffed that up already. These names are hard to say.
Who thought of this question, Paul? I wonder.
I don't know.
Oh, we then got a response from Fernan at Fernan Ayuso. Apologies if I mispronounced your name, Fernan. And their suggestion was, I think it said Urder. Or is it Urr? It's U-R. Then I think it's an O with a weird little thing above it, then R.
Yeah, it sounds like one of Thor's spare hammers. I don't know.
Yeah, could be.
Like Mjolnir.
Yes, Mjolnir. Mjolnir. Cousin of Bill Nye. Anyway.
Over on Facebook, we heard from Jared Driscoll, and he said it was difficult when the Scarlet Witch went by the nickname Wand.
Wand.
Wand. Wand. No, that would not be a nickname that anyone would want.
No.
No.
And David Jones said he had trouble with Mixel. I can't say it. Until he saw a certain video, which is a clip from the Superman animated adventures where Clark Kent is reading a paper, mispronounces the name, and then the imp from that dimension pops out of the paper and teaches him how to say it. Now, if I say it slowly, I might get it right, because I did watch the video before we recorded tonight, and I think it's Mixia's Spitlick.
Mixia's Spitlick. That's sort of what I've always said.
Yeah. I just sort of look at it and go, alphabet soup.
Right. Mm. We got an email from Robert Kelly from Fire and Water Podcast and Film and Water and Pod Dylan and, Superman Minute and all sorts of
podcasts. He likes podcasts on that guy.
He does like podcasting. Yeah. Yes. And he said, in answer to this week's question, embarrassingly, I have been pronouncing Steve Gates' name wrong all these decades, even though he's one of my favourite Aquaman writers, so I've had the chance to talk about him and to him a lot. And I used to think it was Skeets, but it's Skates. Knowing that, I still say it wrong. Also, still no idea how to say Doug Munch. Let's say Doug Munch. Doug is a tricky name. Anyway, he said, attached is my iTunes review. Not sure if you saw it show up or not. Yeah, we've already read it on the show, Rob.
Jeez.
Jeez, is that the bit you don't listen to? Yeah.
Mm. And we also got an email from Arbat again, and he said, Dear Mike and Paul, just finished listening to episode 106. Good fun as always, and thanks for doomsplaining the pig carcass. This is just a quick note regarding the Tiresias Wars. A year after this storyline ended, Rachel Pollack returned to it in the companion book of the Vertigo Tarot deck. It's a beautiful box set with a book about tarot written by Pollack, who's considered an expert in this field, and a deck of cards designed by Dave McKean. Some Vertigo characters were used to illustrate the major arcana. You probably already know about it already, but the Doom Patrol were used to represent the Tower, the darkest card in the tarot. In the book, Pollack doomsplains the Tiresias War in a few lines and remarks that our world today is a compromise between the extremes of total liberation and total slavery. The card is beautiful and it's a nice coda to the story. In case you haven't seen it, I'm sending a scan. All the best, Arbat. Thanks, Arbat. And yeah, I was aware of the Vertigo Tarot deck done way back when, but I've never actually seen any of the art from it. And yeah, the tower looks really cool. It's just this. I love Dave McKean's art. So dark and brooding, and oh. And on the other side of it, yeah, there's a brief explanation about the Tiresias War storyline and how the tower is represented and used in tarot readings. So it was very cool.
I knew about the tarot deck, but didn't know about the actual Doom Patrol connection in the tarot deck. So, yeah. Mm.
Nice. So, Paul, right, do you have a name you keep mispronouncing in comics?
Yeah, no, I shouldn't be so complex, but I always get stuck on Cerebus. I often say it as Cerberus.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know why I do that, but yeah, I often have that problem. But it's not even tricky like some of these other ones.
Some of these other ones.
It's a schnitzel. Schnitzel.
The illy chillin' schnitzel.
What about you, Mike?
I honestly couldn't think of one, but that Superman villain, the small impish chap who can bend reality to his will. And his name starts with M. Mr. Mixius... That guy. Even though I've watched a clip on how to say it earlier tonight, I still have trouble saying it. Mixius Spitlick.
Mixius Spitlick.
Yeah, that one. I can't say it quickly, though, so...
I know in the past I have amused Americans by how I say banana. So.
Really?
Yeah. They say banana, but I say banana.
I know banana splits. I know I amused an American friend with the way I pronounce schedule.
Schedule?
Yeah.
What's wrong with the way you say schedule?
Apparently it's hilarious that I don't say schedule.
Wow.
So, yeah. Thanks, Jessica.
And I believe it's weird the way I say Aquaman.
Okay. What's wrong with that?
A lot of them say Aquaman.
Oh, God.
Like it's spelt with a U. Anyway.
Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Outrageous.
Oh, Bane is fighting Aquaman. All right.
Oh, dear. Okay, look, I think we're getting a bit silly now. So probably best that we sign off and stop being knobs about it all. So next time on the show, we are going to return to Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol, issues 80 and 81 from Rachel Pollack's run, getting even closer to the end of Volume 2. Only, 8 issues to go.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, you're getting there. And we have a slightly easier question of the week for the next episode. What is that question, Paul?
It is, who is your favourite fictional hero of colour?
Ooh, so nice.
Get diverse, dudes.
Yeah, there's ladies. So many good choices.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, that's gonna be a lot of fun to hear everyone's responses to that. And we'll be able to read them out.
Actually understand what we're saying.
Yes. Because that's it from us for this episode of Waiting for Doom. If you'd like to get in touch, you can always get in touch with us on Twitter at WFDpod. Say hi to Wilfred while you're there. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, or you can check out the Waiting for Doom Facebook page or Doug Zavisha's excellent posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. Whew. And that's us done. We survived our first burn experience.
Excellent.
So thanks, Paul.
Is that first degree burns? Is that right?
Oh, God. I retract my thanks. You know.
I'm sorry.
All right, guys. That's us. We're out of here. We will catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
So in the finale, in issue 99, through the power of talking and Manhunter scanning Nudge's mind, the teams have pieced everything together. Millennia ago, the Amazons banished my knob! it's a fucking
you comedy. Burnt your knob.
Oh, whacked my dog.
Okay, so
knob.
Oh, you bastard.